I'm Carol Hills, and this is The World. Lots to get to today, including an interview with former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright and a story about how catfish got caught up in America's trade wars. But let's start with a case before the Supreme Court today. The justices heard oral arguments challenging President Donald Trump's travel ban, the most recent one. The ban is mostly aimed at people from several Muslim-majority countries. Some opponents of the executive order have dubbed it a Muslim ban. But speaking before the court today, Solicitor General Noel Francisco, representing the Trump administration, argued this.
This is not a so-called Muslim ban. If it were, it would be the most ineffective Muslim ban that one could possibly imagine, since not only does it exclude the vast majority of the Muslim world, it also omits three Muslim-majority countries that were covered by past orders, including Iraq, Chad, and Sudan. And so this order is what it purports to be and what its process and substance confirms that it is. It is an order that is based on a multi-agency worldwide review that applied neutral criteria all across the world and concluded under those neutral criteria, most of the world was fine, but a small part of it failed to provide us with that minimum baseline of information, the minimum, not the ideal, the bare minimum, terrorism history, criminal history, that we need to protect the country.
Solicitor General Noel Francisco arguing the Trump administration's case for a travel ban in front of the Supreme Court today. Human rights attorney Azadeh Shashahani watched the proceedings from inside the courtroom. I asked her about the main arguments made by the Trump administration.
Well, what they are saying is that the ban only targets five Muslim-majority countries as opposed to, you know, the entire Muslim world, and so it is narrowly tailored to focus on specific countries, and that it is not discriminatory, and it is motivated by national security.
Was there pushback to that argument?
Well, definitely the justices were asking really good questions, actually. One of them said, well, what if, you know, a future president makes all of these anti-Semitic remarks in the course of his campaign, and then after he gets elected, basically directs his administration to ban the entry of all Jews. Would you view that any differently? And the justices were also zoning in on the issue of the waivers, because under the latest version of the Muslim ban, there's supposedly a waiver available. But all the news reports have indicated that only two individuals have been granted a waiver. And so the justices were mentioning, for example, that the 10-year-old girl with cerebral palsy has been denied a waiver. And there are many other cases of individuals with serious illnesses, professors or students who need to be in academic institutions, that they have been denied a waiver.
And I imagine the issue of national security came up. Was that a big point that the Trump administration lawyers made?
Right. That's, you know, that's a point that the Trump administration kept pushing. And, you know, the other side, the state of Hawaii was arguing that Congress already has a scheme available for that, that is, you know, well articulated and well thought out. And so the president is basically, deciding to go above and beyond. And that basically, goes beyond what he's able to do. He does not have the authority to just issue a flat ban against individuals from five Muslim-majority countries.
Of course, those countries are Iran, Libya, Somalia, Syria, and Yemen. I'm wondering, what were the main points made by Neil Katyal? He represents Hawaii, which is pushing this case.
Right. One of the points that he was making was that this third version of the Muslim ban goes beyond his authority, the authority of a president, especially when Congress already has a scheme in place. The other point that he was making is that this amounts to discrimination on the basis of nationality in granting of visas. And then lastly, and, you know, very importantly, is that this is basically religious discrimination. I think for many of us, it's very clear that this is still a Muslim ban, despite what the Trump administration is saying and how they've tried to dress it up. Neil Katyal also made the point, for example, that the president, a lot of the Islamophobic remarks he made in the course of his campaign in the lead up to the elections. But as president, he retweeted three Islamophobic videos from, you know, an Islamophobic and racist organization in Europe. And, you know, he did not apologize or anything like that. And so, you know, it's very clear what the motivation behind the Muslim ban is.
What are the core issues here that the court has to decide, and how may they set a precedent?
Well, obviously, they need to decide whether the Muslim ban stays or goes. We hope they strike it down. But one of the issues that they need to decide on was the extent of his authority. Obviously, the issue of whether the Muslim ban discriminates against Muslims and so as such, you know, violates the constitution, that issue also needs to be decided on. And anything that comes out of the Supreme Court is going to set a precedent.
People have been waiting for this case, this third version of the travel ban. Were there any surprises today at the Supreme Court?
No, I don't think that there weren't surprises. You know, I was glad that justices had probing questions and they had obviously looked at the briefs and thought deeply about the issues. And that was really encouraging to see. I think it's hard to tell in terms of which way, you know, the Supreme Court will rule. You know, we hope that the Supreme Court will strike down the ban, but regardless, the fight will go on.
Azadeh Shashahani there. She's the legal and advocacy director for a human rights organization called Project South. For some, this Supreme Court case brings back memories of 1944. That's the year the justices ruled in a landmark case called Korematsu versus the United States. The case challenged the legality of placing Japanese Americans in internment camps during World War II. The Supreme Court ruled in favor of the U.S. government. Hale Yasui is a filmmaker and the daughter of Minoru Yasui. His case went to the Supreme Court in the 1940s, along with those of Fred Korematsu and Gordon Hirabayashi. Hale, you joined the children of the other two men in filing an amicus brief in the travel ban case. Tell us about the parallels you see between your father's case and the travel ban and what points you wanted to make to the court.
There are many parallels between the Muslim ban and the Japanese American internment from World War II. Principally, it's a question of whether or not the government can single out and punish an entire group of people simply because of who they are. In the case of Japanese Americans back in World War II, it was for no other reason, for no crimes that they were accused of, but simply being Japanese Americans. Likewise, today, there are whole groups of people based on national origin, Syria being a case in point, but also the other four Muslim-majority countries who are being discriminated against simply because of their national background. No due process, no trials, no hearings to determine whether or not every single person in that group is a terrorist in the case of today or back in World War II, to determine whether or not the 120,000 people who were detained were in fact Japanese spies. History proves that in fact there were none. None of the people who were detained were ever found to be traitors to the United States. No espionage, no sabotage. So that, to me, is the most important parallel between the Muslim ban today and the Japanese-American internment back during World War II.
One difference that's being pointed out is that the internment of Japanese-Americans in World War II, that was especially egregious because it affected U.S. citizens. And in the Trump attempts at a ban, these are non-citizens from overseas. Is that an important difference to you?
It is an important difference on the one hand, but some people are not aware of the fact that the first generation Japanese Americans, they were called Issei, the immigrants. They were not U.S. citizens. The reason they were not U.S. citizens is because they were not allowed to become U.S. citizens. That's part of the history of U.S. immigration law. Back in 1940s, all Asians were prohibited from becoming U.S. citizens. So the difference, of course, is they were not abroad. They were in the United States, but they were aliens. Our contention is that aliens, as well as citizens, have due process rights. Under the Constitution, we're supposed to apply equal justice under the law, regardless of whether you are a U.S. citizen or a foreign national. So the issue of citizenship is legally an important point, but on the humanitarian level, I think we need to look at this as whether or not discrimination is constitutional and is it moral.
Now, the 1944 Supreme Court ruling in Korematsu versus the United States, it's been widely criticized by legal scholars, but it's never been overturned. Is part of your motivation in filing the amicus brief to make sure that the Korematsu ruling would not be used as a precedent?
On some level, yes. Unfortunately, only the U.S. Supreme Court can overrule itself. And the case has already been adjudicated. So what is at question, what is at stake now is not the World War II cases, but of course the Muslim ban. What we're hoping is that in the arguments, in the decision, that consideration will be made with regard to the way that the Japanese American internment cases were decided. In the 1940s, the U.S. Supreme Court basically deferred to the government's arguments of military necessity. Now, the government is asking the court to defer to the justification of national security. So even though we can't actually overrule the Japanese American cases, we are hoping that that historical wrong can be righted, be disavowed and repudiated indirectly in the arguments and in the decision of the Muslim ban case.
Your father, Minoru Yasui, was a lawyer. How do you think he'd see this case?
I know he would be glad to see it coming up before the U.S. Supreme Court because he was a great believer in the fact that what was happening to Japanese Americans was not only an injustice against Japanese Americans, it was a question of justice in general for all Americans. So I do think that he himself would be the amicus on this brief and not myself, because he was trained in law and a very firm believer in equal justice under the law for all persons, regardless of race, regardless of religion, for innocent until proven guilty. He was a firm, firm believer, a great patriot in terms of wanting to always defend the United States' professed values and principles of democracy.
Holly, what will you be watching for as this case moves forward in the Supreme Court?
I'm particularly interested in Neil Katyal, who is the attorney for the state of Hawaii, because it was Katyal who actually issued a statement of error with regard to the Japanese American cases. And so Katyal is very conscious, very aware of this historical precedent, how it was wrong. And so I'm hoping that Katyal will, in fact, bring up the Japanese American cases as examples of what the court should not do. There are some really important and fundamental principles at stake, and I think it is something that the justices will take into consideration.
Holly Yasui is a filmmaker and the daughter of Minoru Yasui, one of the men who challenged the legality of sending Japanese Americans to internment camps during World War II. Thanks, Holly.
Thank you.